This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey, everybody. I'm H.F. Mason. I'm a General Surgeon and Chief Quality Officer for the Baptist System.
Well, folks, we are so fortunate today. We love when our guests return. And today we have a returning guest, Morgan Jones. And many of y'all know him if you have any connection to the Shingo Institute, or maybe you've read some of his other books. But Morgan and some others have co-authored a book called Don't Repeat Our Mistakes. Don't Repeat Our Mistakes. And the subtitle says 9 Lessons for Leaders Championing Cultural Transformation. But before we jump right into the book, for those that maybe don't know, Morgan, tell us a little bit about yourself, about your background, and kind of what was the purpose for writing this book?
Thank you, Skip and Dr. Mason, for your time. Look, Morgan Jones, I started off as an apprentice fitter turner in the Navy, worked my way up, became a Navy officer. And then I worked in many industries. So I moved from Marine, went into construction and machinery, spent 10 years at Caterpillar, product design, engineering, fixing things. I liked making things work. And get, well, when they weren't working, you know, how can I make it better for the future? And then worked in different industries, postal, banking, and I know probably strange transition, gases, most recently in mining, and I'm going to be moving into electrical distribution, working towards a net zero targets for the country. So that's me. So I've been written 9 books. This one's the 9th. So, and all the proceeds for this one go to the Michael J. Fox Foundation. The way the book came about, I started off and I wrote like 9 core questions that I tend to use when I'm coaching leaders. And it's like very consistent. And then I talked to Peter Barnett and said, "Say, Pete, do you fancy writing the book?" He said, "I've never written one." So we started fleshing about, talking for about a year or so about the book. And then we roped in Dale. And eventually we started writing. But when we realized it was very much more of a preaching, these are the things you should do. So we actually then interviewed a load of CEOs, COOs and CFOs and asked them what were their biggest challenges, what was their biggest lessons. And that, of course, you know, Asia, Australia, Europe and the Americas, North and South. And what we ended up finding, there was a common set of lessons that they, you know, mistakes, you could put it, and then here was the lesson they got from their mistake. And so that's how it came about. And then we put the book out and they said, definitely, you know, bring more in the story, tell people from the leader's perspective what mistakes they'd made. And therefore, how did they reflect and learn? So people like to learn from others making mistakes rather than it being a preaching academic book. So that's the story of the book. And then we decided, because all my books are all to do with donating to charity. And this one, we decided to go to the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's.
Well, Morgan, once again, thank you for being here. And that certainly is a great cause for Parkinson's disease. Michael J. Fox was, you know, growing up, I watched Family Ties and Back to the Future. Those movies were some of my favorite as a kid. So we appreciate you doing that. And, you know, I was thinking, if I had to write a book, I don't know, you know, about the mistakes I've made. I don't know if there's enough paper in the world to contain it all. But I was thumbing through, and you know, you talk a lot about, you know, being a leader is being a coach, but this book is about lean leadership, and I think our listeners, you know, are familiar with the concepts of lean and of course leadership. But to talk to us about what is lean leadership.
Wow, that's an interesting one. It's actually a mindset. So people tend to think, you know, there's a difference between management and leadership. So what's leading is inspiring people. And then lean's about how do you actually set the systems and processes up for people to excel. I'll put them in a space of most potential. And there's a lot of core tools. So you know, you can take lean as a philosophy or you can set of tools, you know, whether it's Hoshin Kanri strategic planning, but really being really clear. And you can't say, well, lean leadership is different to leadership. No, it's actually just a little bit more discipline and some really targeted tools to help any leader become a better leader. So, you know, I'm glad you picked that up about lean leaders and go, well, people who try to do transformations, and I just use the term lean. It could be, you know, this is how do I become a better leader?
Talk to us about some of the high points. What are some of the biggest mistakes that, what are the common threads when you interviewed these CEOs and leaders?
Right. And I'll take the first one. So there was actually originally 8, but then we went back and reflected to all these leaders and one keep coming back again, and that was simplicity. And I heard you see lots of leaders saying we've got to make things simpler for our customers or our patients and our staff, and it's all about that and the simplicity one. So I've coached and I've seen it happen 3 or 4 times where the leaders that have said, look, I want to make simplicity is one of our core values. I want to make sure our strategy is simple. We're simple to deal with as an organization. And so that they really espouse the importance of simplicity to engage everybody down to the front line. And then I watched 2 of them the same day go and do equivalent of a town hall where they're talking to all staff. And they used all these big words, loads of acronyms. It sounded like a Harvard Business Review. So, you know, they sort of said, I believe in simplicity, but I've got to use all these big words. So when I asked them, I said, well, help me understand. You've just told me simplicity, but that's not what I heard. And if you looked at the audience, it's not how they received it. He said, but I have to sound intelligent. So it causes leaders to step back and go, it's not about me. It's about how do I inspire? So really digging deeper into the whole simplicity thing, because the premise of the book, it's divided into, you know, there's 9 lessons, but there's also divided into three distinct sections. The first section's about how would you coach a leader on those 9 lessons. The second part is How does a leader coach themselves? And then thirdly, how does that leader then coach their people? Because the premise is, can you be really a good leader coach if you're not open to coaching yourself? So that's probably the key message. You go, yeah. People say, I want to coach, but they're not open to coaching. So the book is structured. So how would I get received coaching so Skip would coach me? And then I'd get to reflect and coach myself on, you know, the simplicity or is it curiosity? And then eventually, once I've got those 2 mastered, if I can coach myself, I can then be a much better coach for my people. And I come from the right space rather than from a position of expertise, but coming from a position of wanting them to grow and things like that. So I hope that sort of answer your question.
Yeah, it sure does. Absolutely.
So Morgan, let's get into the coaching yourself. You know, I think about the art in the science of coaching and all the amazing work that's out there. And there's something special about having someone outside of you. Yes. And asking questions. How do you think about coaching yourself?
Yeah, and that's a tough question. But first of all, you've really got to be able to self-reflect. And first of all, to be able to do that, you need to go and get feedback and say, well, you know, I want to work on curiosity and make sure I'm coming from the right. So one of the other lessons is curiosity. Sometimes people are curious, but the intent is they want to learn. But how they come across is it's a Spanish Inquisition and they want to and they're testing and trying to prove it's wrong. So the first thing is to step back when you're coaching yourself. What's my intent here? You know, so if I want to work on one of these lessons, my intent is for curious. It's not about curious to make sure they've done the right thing. What can I learn? And it's that piece. So it does take a little bit of maturity in to be able to reflect. And some people find it harder. But you can also do it quite superficially. Oh, yeah, I know. I did. I'm doing the right thing. Going, well, how do I know? Let me just go and check the impact. Was that session I had with Dr. Mason, did he feel like I was curious and wanted to learn to understand? Or was I just, did he feel like I was testing him to make sure his thinking was correct? So that makes sense. So the self-coaching piece requires a little bit of self-awareness. And if you struggle in that space, that's why you start off with an external coach. And then you go, well, actually, external coach, come and help me, Skip. I'm struggling with this. I've tried to self-reflect, but it's not quite working. I've tried it. And therefore, I loop back to section one again, which is get an external person to help. But once you start to figure this out and you go, Morgan, you did this last time. Right. What was it going through your mind? Why did you still have feel that you had to use all those big words when you're working with simplicity? Does that make sense?
It does. And, you know, it's and sometimes to make things simple, we have to actually work harder. You know, I can't remember. I don't know if it was Winston Churchill or whoever said, you know, I would have made a shorter speech, but I didn't have the time. You know, to make things simpler requires a lot of time. But one thing I want to talk to you about as a surgeon and when it comes to coaching and leading, one of the big obstacles that I find in myself is that when I was in the operating room, you know, technically the surgeon is the captain of the ship. You're supposed to be the leader in the room. But at the same time, while you're the leader, you are also the one who is doing the work. And so that has been a big obstacle for me, is that trying to lead teams and lead people, I sometimes get bogged down because I feel like I need to understand what they're doing explicitly and even know how to do it myself, which has been a big hindrance for me. A coach doesn't necessarily have to be an expert at what they're coaching.
Correct. So if you think of the great sports coaches, they're not awesome on the you know, you're playing gridiron. They're not experts at defense or whatever, but what they're really good at is getting inside the people's head and getting the individuals to reflect and inspire them. Mm-hmm. So going back to your scenario as a surgeon in the operating theater, you can take one mindset, which is quite close, quite defensive, where you've got to know everybody's job and make sure you can do it and tell them to make sure they're complying. Or it takes a little bit, I trust them as professionals. I need them to be able to do it. They might be better doing sutures than you. So you go, okay, good. Yeah, go do. You know, it's like if you go to the doctor's hospital, people prefer the nurses to give you the injection rather than the doctor, because the nurses do it all the time. So that piece is, it takes a little bit of, well, you know, we talk about the Shingo model, humility. It's actually, I am in charge, but I haven't got to be the expert at every single thing. I'm captain of the ship, but I have a whole team, and your job is to bring the best out in that whole team to give the best outcome for the patient. Does that make sense? It's that humility. And the other piece of the Shingo model, which is the foundation, which is respect. So you respect them. They're professionals. They respect you as a surgeon, but you can either be a dictator and tell them and control them, or you trust and respect them. And then they come out and they'll go, Dr. Mason, can we stop a second? Have we done this? You know, in the old days, no one would dare speak to the surgeon because they're the master in the theater. When you go, actually, you want them to pick something up in case, because you're so in the moment, they may see things from a slightly different perspective and just test.
So, absolutely. And we've told this story many times. I mean, I had a tech who worked for me for years and years, and there are probably a lot of things that she could do better than I could. And you know, yeah, there were times when I made mistakes. I would label the specimen wrong, and she would just kind of come behind me and fix it. So yes, it's we have to be humble for sure.
So let's go back to the title of the book, Morgan. I was sitting there thinking about the book, you know, Don't Repeat Our Mistakes. And so let me just think out loud for a second and feel free to correct me. You know, when you're at, we'll call it 5,000 feet, when you're sitting there and you have your hands on a widget and you're doing something, it's a little easier to see when a mistake has been made. But when you're at 60,000 foot and you're living in more of an abstract world, you know, guiding and leading, I think it's hard sometimes to really even know that a mistake has even occurred. And then therefore, that's probably why external coaching is so important. Am I thinking about that right, Morgan? Does that make sense?
Yeah, so the context environment you're sitting in, so as you get to running a, you know, 30, 70, 100,000 people organization, you don't always see what's happening. There's a couple of important things. One, there's what happens when senior leaders come to visit is the wet paint. So everybody, when a senior leader comes in, you make it all look clean and pretty. However, what you really want is the leader to come see what's really happening, the true essence of Gemba. See where work is done. Previous organization, because I say you've got to scratch that wet paint. If it looks too clean and pretty, just scratch, you know, it might have just been painted. Is it real? So that thing about that curiosity piece. So as you start to go through, as you go up, there's certain characteristics or strengths that you really need to. You need to be curious, not because you don't trust people, but you just want to learn more. And you ask questions, so it's not you need to know everything. Is have you thought about this? So one of my favorite questions when I'm coaching is what would it take for you to change your mind? It's a really good one. And then sometimes I've had one or two people say nothing, and you just reflect the question back. Nothing would ever change your mind, and then it's quite confronting. But the other time, and they came up with the first option. Oh, I'd need to have this happen. And just ask the next question, what else? And get them to probe, because the first answer isn't always the right one. Most of the time it isn't. So you get them to keep probing, and they go, oh, what would it take? Nothing. I could just go and do this. Because they expect, oh, I need the CEO and the CFO and chief quality officer to make this decision for me before I'm allowed to go and do. What would it take for you to actually make that decision? And so that's the interesting one when you start to sort of, it just takes a little bit of... as you go higher in the organization, you've just got to strengthen your curiosity, because you get so busy. I've got 60,000 people. I've got to know everything. I've got to check, make sure, control them. Or am I setting them up to succeed? Are my systems and processes there to set them up? So as a surgeon, you have a checklist, and you go, why? You know, pilots have it. Why do you do that? Because we're humans. You know, and people, if you're not safe to speak up and talk about that, then it becomes it's not a safe environment. What you want is people say, Dr. Mason, you've made a mistake here. I'm pulling up because it's the best outcome for the patient. I don't want to humiliate. So if you accept people of, oh, thanks, you know, and they will and celebrate that challenge. So it creates a psychological safe environment.
You know, I know that Mark Graben wrote the entry to the book, and, you know, Mark has a lot of work around the mistakes that made us, and he has a podcast. Mm-hmm. When you were interviewing the various executives and leaders from, you know, all around the world, did you discover anything or did you learn anything about how these leaders viewed mistakes? Were they viewed as a gift or were they viewed...
That's a great question. 90% would have said no. The reflection, unless it was a pretty big one, it tended to take them quite a bit of time. And sometimes it needs to make the mistake again before they realized. So that was just a one-off. It's a special cause. Whereas actually, when you start to... So if it was a significant impact... They learned the lessons very quickly. If there's an investigation or whatever, then that forces people to reflect. And if their leader didn't actually challenge them to go, well, even if it's a small mistake, we can always learn. So, because what I want people to you know, with Mark, well, talked about it, those mistakes shape us if you reflect. It can actually create a bias for you. And, you know, and you actually sometimes it's built into your subconscious, so you don't even realize why you're doing it, because you got told off in kindergarten or, you know, in elementary school. So that will stick with you. Every time you hear that, it's like the word why. And if you say it a certain way, it takes you back for when you're a toddler and you get told off. It gets the amygdala kicking in. Therefore, blood flow doesn't go to the prefrontal cortex. And actually, what you actually want to do is, instead of why did you do this, what did you consider when you made that decision? What else could you do on reflection?
Skip, Skip, you bring up a great point about the mistakes, because, I think that's a huge hindrance for us in our American society, is that we see mistakes as failures. And so and of course nobody wants to fail. So a lot of times we tend to gloss over or minimize those mistakes or put our head in the sand and ignore them and really not learn from those mistakes. So that's a great point. And Morgan, I wanted to tell us about the third part. You talk about, coaches, leaders being coached, learning how to self-coach, and then where do the leaders take it from there?
Well, the important thing is hopefully they've got a bit more humility and actually share the story when they're coaching their teams, to get them to understand what's the roadblock and biases, making it safe to admit mistakes, and initially share, this is the mistake I made and this is what I learned from it. Actually, that humility and actually going, we're all human, and create a safe environment for your team. And rather than telling them, Skip, you need to be more improve your visibility. You've got to get out to the field more. What feedback are you getting? And you can actually explore. So from a coaching perspective, does Skip actually understand that is a potential mistake he's making? He espouses great words, but he's not enough seen by the people, and things like that. Does that make sense? So I think the key to moving to coach your people, instead of telling them what their mistakes, you've got to get them to first realize, and they might come up with something that it may not be the one of those nine lessons, but it may be something else. They need to first understand, is it a mistake? Because I remember when I first became a junior officer in the Navy, I had my commanding officer just said to me, he said, Jones, fail is just your first attempt in learning. So, first attempt in learning. So you don't, we fail, we lose. But he said, our first attempt in learning, every time you do something, make a decision, reflect what worked well, why did it work well? If it didn't work as well as you expected, why? So that first attempt in learning. And if it doesn't quite work out, good. You've got an extra data point to help you make a better decision next time.
I think that's really good, Morgan, about the first attempt at learning. The reality is, I think a lot of good intentioned people, they take on the identity as a failure. And instead, we try things. Humans try things. And we expect something's going to happen, and many times something different happens. And we get to learn from that, whether it be Thomas Edison or anyone else in the world, we've always heard these lessons about all the mistakes that people have made to learn stuff. And I was just listening to a friend of mine, Jeremy Utley, that wrote a book called Idea Flow. And he says, I have to produce thousands of bad ideas to get to the good ideas. And so I think it's that same level of thought of your first attempt at learning, right? You tried something. It didn't work. But being able to embrace that failure is for what it is, and not necessarily attaching that to your identity is what I think I hear you saying. Is that kind of right?
Yes.
No, and I was just going to say, I think that's another roadblock for us as leaders, is that we don't allow our team members to make mistakes. Now, of course, when you're on a ship, you don't want them punching holes underneath the waterline, but because that's going to sink the ship. But we need to be willing to let them maybe experiment, and not recklessly, but experiment, poke holes above the waterline, and if it's not going to sink the ship. So I really like that saying, the first attempt at learning. As Skip said, really good.
And I think it's interesting because American football, gridiron, if they fumble one ball, doesn't mean they're a useless team. Okay, pick it up. Let's reset, get your right mindset. That was just, it was, it's a lesson learned. Were you too focused on where you were going to run and not catching the ball? So again, creating that environment, and the important thing is self-reflection and team reflection. And go, you know, I've seen big projects in industries where they have what we call a post-implementation review, a PIR, and they go, oh yes, we've done everything, did, and then they highlight a load of lessons learned, but they don't do anything with them until the next project starts, and they go, what were the lessons from last time? Well, why didn't you actually fix the lessons from last time rather than waiting to restart a new project? Makes sense.
That's a great point. I'm going to actually ask one of our other hosts a question now. Dr. Mason, I would suspect that you probably had lots of debriefing processes after surgeries. Is that correct?
Sure. Yeah.
And what did that look like? I mean, for laymen.
Well, you know, we would get done, and we would, you know, especially when I was a resident. And you know, it would be you and your chief resident or you're attending, and you'd talk about the case, and, you know, well, how do you think the case went? Well, I kind of struggled with this part and whatnot. And then they'd say, well, you know, next time you may want to try this or that or whatnot. So, yeah, it was good. It was good.
Awesome. Well, Morgan, this has been fantastic. I love having you back. You write books faster than I can get you back. So
prolific writer.
Every time I see Morgan at the Shingo conference or something, he's like, I got another book out. So, Morgan, thank you so much for all of the work that you do, not just writing books and not just consulting, but even with the Shingo Institute, you do a tremendous amount of work, and you've been recognized on a pretty consistent basis. And I'm so grateful to know you and learn from you. And hopefully you'll come back again. I suspect there'll be another book coming out of you, but
yeah, I suspect so.
Yeah, I think so too. So on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, thank you so much, Morgan, for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Morgan.